Okay, Enrico is going to talk to us about Italy, in particular sort of the student uprising, the role of fascism, and people's reaction to the crisis.
Yeah, well, okay, first of all, let's clarify a few things about Italy in terms of crisis and economical crisis. People should understand, like, Italy always felt on a crisis in a way, or since I'm alive at least. So, yeah, economically, people haven't really touched it yet. Haven't really experienced it yet directly. They're just hearing about it, so it's not something you can really touch on a ground level. And also that the way people reacted to it is not necessarily a direct reaction to it. So probably we better look at the behavior of these people reacting on it. That actually changed a few things since we were used to. For example, well, the main example is the student uprising that happened during the past months, like October, November, and December mainly. That was, let's say, started from a government proposal to change some educational, basically to cut funds to schools. That's why, like, mainly students uprised. But this time was different in a way compared to other, because every year almost they give some kind of cut, the cutting on funds, so people are kind of going protesting against it. This time you could tell it was a different, first of all, because again, not good on our side, but there was this new, let's say, fascist student bloc that uprised, and they got more and more organized, mainly exploiting the fear that is going around on people anyway, and around how they not trust the government, they don't trust politicians, and they always try and change one side to another kind of thing. So let's say in this like social environment, lots of fascist groups managed to exploit it, and we have to admit, kind of cleverly. They often took, let's say, our things or messages and turned them into some kind of right wing. But that was kind of appealing for more people, for many people. We can see this mainly in two separate facts. One, there was this occupation of university. It was mainly, I think it was in November, where some fascist car arrived, trying just to, you know, to bother students really, and there was a kind of a big riot outside university where police were involved. And from that day, let's say, students evolved differently, and they kind of didn't want to be manipulated by other politicians or other big names that still are part of the left-wing movement, but they're kind of considered very, you know, kind of mainstream, let's say. So you could see the first reactions on demos, like student demos, related to the same issue, but where like famous people just appeared, you know, just have a go. But then we all know that journalists would have turned the whole demo into them, basically, focusing attention. So we start seeing students kicking out famous people from demonstrations because they don't want them to be part of it. They just want it to be a proper student thing from the law, as we say. And the name they actually, I don't know if they were given this name or they chosen, is anomalous wave. I don't know if you get the meaning of it, but basically, yeah, a strange wave. Anyway, we can tell it has been different. And then there was this big fact in Rome, a big student demo was the end of October, I think. I'm not precisely sure about the dates anyway. Where there was this situation where the fascists auto-organized themselves without really letting many people know, but they organized a student bloc where they appeared, let's say many of them, or at least it looks like there were many, because they managed to get involved other, let's say, average students that they were just on strike, really, not really sure which demonstration to go to, kind of thing. So, yeah, by the media point of view, we can see like many fascists, let's say, students in a big square. As soon as a riot started, and I'm gonna tell you now how it started, all these people were 15, basically. All skinheads with like sticks with a tricolor, I mean the Italian flag on it. So like, yeah, typically fascist. Because all the other people, of course, left because they weren't was even willing to riot. And this was actually, from an anarchist point of view, kind of a unique situation because it probably haven't happened for like 30 years that you could actually see fascists on a demo without coppers surrounding them and actually have a free riot, let's call it. It didn't happen for years, so even this situation for the comrades there was taken a bit in a weird way. They wouldn't know how to act, really. But all it happens was a big riot. They were, basically beaten up, but not too much, because the coppers was basically just behind them, ready to get them and to save them. I mean, even if on TV, they look like they're on the floor, being arrested by the police, if you just hear the audio and the way they talk to each other, you can tell it was something pre-organized before, and the coppers were there to basically save them. I mean, probably the people inside those 15 fascists we're talking about, there were probably three of them that knew what was going to happen. The other were just naive, in a way. They really believed on it, and they went for it. And they all got nicked by, in a way, nothing happened to them. But this is to show how, like, this right-wing movement started exploiting this kind of crisis and desperate situation, where even, like, even average student that probably before didn't even want to take part or put themselves on a side, they now did. And so this thing kind of goes on even, I mean, yeah, I would need like probably a day to talk about it. But anyway, briefly, in the past years, there are more and more social centers, as we speak, like these kind of places run by fascists. I know that sounds weird, but that's what they do. Completely different politics sometimes. Some other times, they almost have the same politics. And we hate to say that, but it's actually, yeah, decreasing the movement, like reputation for that. But even, anyway, to go back to the connection to this, to the crisis, it's something that, yeah, as I said, Italy can't really fail it economically yet. Also, even if, like, the prime minister appeared on TV suggesting Italians to keep spending as they always did and no fear to have. And, of course, people are not really even actually listening to this kind of thing. They don't have the money to spend. Even if they wanted to spend it anyway, they wouldn't have them. So, yeah, there were, like, other protests, like starting from the low, from like the background, from the streets, that people spontaneously reacted to government decisions. Like there was a big thing you probably heard about around Naples when they wanted to dump all the trash from Europe, basically, underground where people actually still live. That was a big uprising. And it wasn't, I mean, yeah, of course we call it a political one, but it wasn't really like a political movement behind it that organized and manipulated people. People uprise spontaneously. So I guess that's how we would see the reactions to the crisis in Italy, like how the people spontaneously react to it and they go against something, let's say that before they probably wouldn't have, or they wouldn't have seen the point of it. So it's becoming more and more like, from a logistical point of view, something to go against because you fear it just as a life instinct, let's say. So it's, let's say there's not much movement on it organizing because they feel the crisis, but it's just something automatically happened, like spontaneously. Mm. And as Antonio was saying, like also this strategy of tension that I don't know if you've heard about, but anyway, planting bombs or making facts happening to then blame something is a government strategy that often went on, like in Italy in the 70s, run mainly by the CIA, also in Greece and other countries, Ireland as well. And we can still see that in a way when exactly they send like a car full of fascists in front of a university, which is occupied by, of course, leftist students or anarchists. Mm. This causes a riot, and on TV it makes it look like, oh, these poor skinhead guys went passing through and people beating them up and smashed their cars, kind of thing. And again, to create more tension, same as if, like, people cannot create a known left-wing movement, otherwise they get beaten up. But what the media didn't show is how these fascists attacked a student demo during the morning of the same day because they knew nobody like hardcore was around. So they knew they could simply go and beating like the students with a school bag. And that's what nobody on TV talked about. Nobody on the government talked about the day after. But all they showed was actually the big riot when people with helmets arrived and wanted to give them a big beating. And then the coppers actually rescued them. So that's what you actually get on TV then. And yeah, we can still call it a strategy of tension, even if it's far away from planning a bomb and exploding a train station. But that's the point they're going to get to anyway, if they feel there is the need for it. And yeah, but mainly, as she said, if you have more specific questions, I mean, just talk to me straight, you know, we can try to see if there's some possible answer for it.
Thank you. I appreciate the chairs are sort of badly arranged in terms of a general discussion, but it's to fit everybody in. You've heard from all our speakers and a couple of the commonalities that were raised for me, and you might have noticed more, was firstly, there's a lot more going on in these countries than you generally hear about in the media. And the second thing is the stories of increased tension. that the far right seem to be mobilising more and more effectively. And but also that there's amazing displays of sort of solidarity and common action, and that hopefully give us hope and inspiration.